Yesterday I suggested to Ananga Mohan Prabhu, just offhand I suggested, that I could speak something about my memories of being in ISKCON in Calcutta in the 1970s and the early days, earlier days. So he is quite enthusiastic about that. So I'll speak on that now. Of course, the norm is to have discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam at this time. But anyway, at least Ananga Mohan Prabhu thought it would be very inspiring to the devotees, especially those who are serving here now. And I hope it may be instructive. Otherwise, there's no point just talking about memories, but there should be some gain in Krishna consciousness. There should be some, that should help us to come closer to Krishna. I first came to Calcutta in 1976. At that time I was 19 years old. I'd been in ISKCON for 1 year. Coming to the Mayapur festival. We were supposed to go from the airport to Mayapur directly. But myself and Vichit Chavirya Prabhu, who was my temple president in London after some time, who recently passed away, and another devotee I can't remember, we were already sick. It was a normal thing that devotees coming from the West got sick. So we landed in Delhi. At that time, I don't think there were no direct flights from London to Calcutta. We arrived in Delhi, took another flight to Calcutta. I was already feeling sick on the plane. It wasn't due to India. I'd picked up hepatitis from a devotee who had come from Africa to England. So we didn't go with the rest of the group to Mayapur from Calcutta, but we came into the city so we could rest a little bit before going to. And I don't think I came to the temple. I don't remember coming to the temple at all in 1976. Just we came into the city and stayed in some dumpy hotel and then rested a bit and then we went to Mayapur. Now I'll just speak during this session about my memories in Calcutta, not traveling in West Bengal or Mayapur, being in Mayapur at that time, because if I speak all of that, then it'll take a long time. I just jotted down a few notes here, so I don't. There may be so much more to say. So anyway, first arriving in Calcutta. I remember that two things struck me. Just driving from the airport into the city. And the airport at that time was really outside the city. There was that drive, that driveway down from through Salt Lake or at the edge of Salt Lake. And the Salt Lake was a relatively new area. And that road was a very nice road compared to most of the other roads in the city. That road was kept nicely with the idea of giving an impression to people coming from overseas. They come from the airport, they come into the city and they just see this road and they think it's very nice. And then later you get into the city with all the potholes and the things which are called roads. So two things I remember I learned shortly after joining the movement in England, I'd learned from Srila Prabhupada's books how to read Hindi script, what's called Devanagari script, before I came to India. And I seeing the Bengali script everywhere, I thought, this looks too tough. I don't think I can ever learn this. Later I did. The other thing, the other memory I have, is seeing so many broken down looking houses and thinking that, well, they must be all, there can't be anyone living in them, they must just be waiting to be destroyed. Because I'd only lived in England all my life, England and Ireland, Britain, British Isles. And such buildings, no one would be allowed inside them because they'd be considered too dangerous. And they would just be knocked down. And I thought they must be all waiting for just to be knocked down. But then I saw people are moving in. And first I saw going on 1 kilometer, 2 kilometers. There's so many of them. It can't be the whole city that's up for, and people moving in and out of them. And I just couldn't. I had to come to grip with the fact that people were living in such buildings. So there were two memories. Then I came again in that was March, April, something. It must have been March 1977. So at that time I came for 6 weeks to India to the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival and stayed a little time after the Vrindavan Festival. And in 1977 I came to India with the idea of staying. I came in late August, spent a month in Delhi, then a month traveling in Maharashtra and UP, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. And then I came to 1977 October it must have been, to Calcutta, and from Calcutta to Mayapur. Then I was traveling in with the Mayapur Traveling Sankirtan Party, which at that time meant a matador van. We had two buses. And there are typical matador vans, means on one side the door only opened from the outside but not from the inside. So you had to wind the window down to open it. But then if you wound the window down, you couldn't get it back up again. Things like that. And then on the other side, you could only open it from the inside and not from the outside. So many things like that. It was just, that was normal life. To have a van in those days was something highly prestigious. Most people walked here and there, even in the city. So then I was in Mayapur traveling Sankirtan, and then during the winter of 78 to 79, I was living in Calcutta temple. And then I went to Bangladesh, approximately April 1979, went to stay in Bangladesh. I was there for some years. So during the period of when I was in Mayapur, traveling Sankirtan, we hardly spent any time in Mayapur. We spent more time in Calcutta. Because we have to come here to get books. We didn't spend that much time in Calcutta, but sometimes we'd have to come to repair generator or the vehicle. Always something was in need of repair. So we'd be in and out of Calcutta. And when I was in Bangladesh, I was also often coming to Calcutta. I'd have to leave the country every so often. There'd be things to do in Calcutta. So in this way I spent a few months continuously. Oh, and actually when I was stationed in Bangladesh, I spent about 2 months continuously here in Calcutta also. So I spent quite some time in, from approximately 78 through to about 1985, 1986. Of course, ISKCON in Calcutta had been going on for quite some time before that. Since 1971. So, That's the time period I'm talking about. The memories which I say, they may be somewhat mixed up, but it's approximately 78 through to the mid-1980s. So, my first memory of coming here was I was in Vrindavan, and I'd been traveling with the UP, in UP and Maharashtra, distributing books, but I'd been given a specific service which made it actually very difficult to distribute the books, which I won't speak about now. But then I met Jayapataka Maharaj in Vrindavan, and he said how our party in Assam is distributing so many books, which later I went there and found, yeah, they did distribute many books. They didn't have many books to distribute. There was Gitar Gan the first time I was out, and a few issues of Bhagavad Darshan, and we didn't have other books, and later other books were printed. Those, Gitar Gan was Prabhupada's original work. And then we got these books, Bhagavane Kota, Bhakti Ratnavali, and one other. So that was also what Prabhupada had written in Bengali before he went to the West. So later those books were put together in one book as Vairagya Vidya, and then gradually other books came out. They were So I was attracted to join a party where I could actually distribute some books. So I came, and we came on the Rajdhani from Delhi to Howrah. Myself, Jayapataka Maharaj, myself, and someone else who I can't remember now. And just some small memory in Bardhaman station, Jayapataka Maharaj got some chapa cola, which I'd never heard of or seen before, and said it tastes just like strawberries. That's all. That's a small memory. And then we arrived at Howrah station, and Jayapataka Maharaj said, okay, bring everything out. And he left. He used to wear these wooden shoes made in Mayapur, wooden sandals. So by the time I got all the luggage out, I just got out, and I could hear him going clack, 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 clack down the stage. He was already at the end of the platform by the time I managed to get everything out. So then we came here to 3C Albert Road, and it was late morning. There hadn't been any prasadam saved for us, because presumably because to make a phone call in those days was like, if you could get any punya for it, it'd be like making 10,000 years of austerity in the Himalayas to make a phone call. And if you wanted to speak to someone from here to Bara Bazaar, the best way was to go there rather than to try to phone. If there was a phone, if people had a phone, then the chances of it working were very small. Or you pick up the phone and there's already someone else's conversation with someone else going on. Or there's some kind of weird noises, or there's no sound at all and there's nothing you can do to make any sound come out of it. So even to make a local call was like, you have to do a few mantras or something and ask for some special blessings. What to speak of making a distance call from Delhi to Calcutta. I mean, in Bangladesh once, one devotee from America was with me, and he almost literally had a nervous breakdown because of the phones. I mean, apart from everything else, he was really trying to phone his parents in America to send him a ticket so he could get out. But first of all, to book the call is so difficult. And then after you eventually get an operator on the line who can hear you and who's actually at least somewhat cooperative. And then they book the call, and then they don't call back, and you call them and they say, yes, you're in line, and then you go on all day, and You still don't get it, and after 24 hours they automatically cancel it. So you have to start all over again. So this kind of thing drove... I saw one devotee almost literally become crazy. We hadn't given any advance notice that we were coming. So I just remember everything was dark because there's no electricity. Most of the time there was no electricity. I think that's improved recently in West Bengal, is it? Otherwise, normally there was no electricity in Calcutta. Sometimes it would come on. So it's quite dark, but I remember thinking how nice the building was. It was actually everything here is different. I think pretty much almost everything is completely different to what it was. The same shape is on the veranda ceiling. That veranda ceiling wouldn't even be here unless Prabhupada had specifically said, keep it like this. Otherwise, just like this, it used to go into what used to be the office over there. But the top portion of that has been converted into, there's something up there. So this would have also been converted into, this upper portion would have been converted into something else if Srila Prabhupada hadn't specifically said to keep it like this. Prabhupada liked it. The temple room previously, it ended here. And there was a wall here and a door to enter it. This extension has been made by knocking down. There was a door here to go through to the kitchen, which was at the back of the kitchen. Some tiny little place. And yeah, everything's changed. Prabhupada's room was there. Next to Prabhupada's room, the bathroom is still there, but it was a big open bathroom. And there was a room, there was, most of the time there was no water. Srila Prabhupada would personally, he was the only place in the world where he shared his bathroom with everyone else. That he had, one side there was an entrance from Prabhupada's room, and the other side there was an entrance for all the others, because that was the only one in the whole building. So, but like I say, most of the time there was no water anyway. So mostly we would go and bathe in the pukur in the morning before Mangal Arati. One time Shravanananda got bitten by a snake early in the morning. That was normal. So yeah, pretty much everything's changed. These alcoves here, they all had paintings. But when I came, they had paintings which I believe were done by Pandu. And here was Nrisimhadeva. Actually, when I first came, there were some different paintings. Then they were changed to other paintings. Nrisimhadeva was here. Mahaprabhu was there, as far as I remember. Huh? Well, the thing is, when I first came, then again it was changed. And then it became changed to this. So exactly what it was at that time, I don't know. That would be before you came. So, yeah. Pandu had done... Yeah, there were paintings, but like I say, after some time the paintings were changed. And then it was changed to this. So, yeah, anyway, my first impression was that it's very... nice building. And actually there were so many buildings, it was all from the British era around here. All around here. Srila Prabhupada liked it very much. He said he called this an aristocratic quarter because there were buildings which were... This used to be the British. The British people used to live in this area. There were none of these high-rise buildings. From the roof, that building at the back wasn't there, nor did we have that. Even the land, we didn't. At the time we were renting it, we didn't have it. The landlord's house was over there. I don't. Something else is there now. Singh Roy was his name, and he didn't like us, and we didn't like him. But he couldn't get us out. And there was some Mrs. Chakravarti living downstairs. She didn't like us either. It's not surprising, actually. From the roof up here, this is the Brahmachari, same place the Brahmachari Ashram was. The biggest building in the area was the Hindi High School, which is now called the Biela High School. And you could see Minto Park and the buses going on Lower Circular Road. So, times have changed. It's all big buildings now. And the only reason this building is saved is because Prabhupada installed Radha Govinda here. Otherwise, this would have been broken down also. I just remember from that first time that we came that it was Ekadashi, and there was no prasad left from the morning. It was mostly just some fried begum. And so our meal consisted mostly of fried begun. That was what was left over. And Jagtar Maharaj wasn't very happy. He said, the begun means nirgun. And that's all we had. I just remember. It's a small memory. So, we'll do that traveling Sankirtan in Mayapur. We did spend quite a lot of time distributing in Calcutta. We also went to many holy places, connected with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I must have visited almost all of the places connected with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates in the course of that traveling Sankirtan. We also went to so many towns, I can't even remember them all now. But we came to Calcutta quite a lot also, because like that, when we needed books, if you want books, you have to get them printed. There was theoretically a BBT, but Pancharatna Prabhu was in charge, not the one who's in Jaipur now. He's an American devotee. But he was also in charge of pretty much everything. I mean, apart from being in charge of the temple, there was ISKCON food relief and the Mayapur temple plans and legal matters and so many things. So practically him being in charge of BBT meant that if you actually wanted to get the books, you have to go to the printer and harass them to print them, because we'd pay them the minimum and they wouldn't want to do the job unless we went and harassed them. So, or other people would come with their work and they would harass them and do their work, because there weren't that many printers and there wasn't much electricity. So it seemed, and printing in those days, it was just coming out from hand typesetting to great step forward in technology, linotype. So it was, from the modern perspective, it all seems pretty stone age-ish. But I learned about printing and everything from just, if you want books to distribute, you have to go and get them printed. That's the first thing. So anyway, we spent quite a lot of time in Calcutta, necessarily. Go and distribute. Often we went to Shelda Station for book distribution. Wherever we went, the police would harass us. But anyway, we'd go on somehow or other. At Shelda Station once, Tadpur, who you might know, Tadpur, he was, someone threw some big stone at him, hit him in the head, because there was all this propaganda that ISKCON is CIA. And a lot of people believed it. I mean, it was in the paper, and especially the communists in West Bengal, they were promoting this. So people really didn't, many people didn't like us, although some people must have liked us because they took books from us. So I just remember one time at Shelda Station. Shelda Station was also different. It was a big open space in front of Shelda Station. There were no flyovers. No one ever heard of a flyover, even dreamed that such things could exist in Calcutta. Um, So I just one other memory I had, because at that time there were still many refugees from Bangladesh. The 71 war had left many refugees, and still many of them were in a very miserable condition. In fact, once I went to Basirhat on the border, and there was some refugee camp. This was like years afterward, to see if we could do anything, prasad distribution or something like that. So I just remember there was one woman with, she had a few children, and no sign of any husband, because probably they was killed, as so many were. So she had a few children, and she was a beggar. And she came and asked how much the Gita Gan was. And in those days, my Bengali was limited to about 5 or 6 words. Really wasn't much. We used to push the book at people and say, Dekhi, Dekhi. Which is me. We should have said Dekhun, but we just said Dekhi, Dekhi. And they understood. You're supposed to look at it. And then we'd say, Pachata Paisha or something like that. Because in those days, the books, small books, were less than a rupee. Now you can't imagine anything being less than a rupee. We used to bargain with the rickshaw wallahs over like 20 paisa or 25 paisa. Remember that? You weren't in Bengal, you weren't in Calcutta. So, 10 rupees was a lot of money. So she asked the price and we told her. And after some time she came back with a bunch of 5 and 10 paisa coins. She'd gone out to beg and come back after some time and bought the book. So I don't know if she could read it or not, because you don't expect Bangladeshi village women or what. I don't know. She might have been from a good background previously. But in those days, to find anyone in the villages in Bangladesh who read it, there weren't hardly any people read, let alone the women, was highly unlikely. But anyway, she had so much faith. So that's just one incident I remember from that time. Yeah, and we used to go to sometimes to Howrah side, Gariahat, and around the city we go. Gariah we often went, because I think that was one place where the police didn't harass us much. So we used to go to the bazaar there for book distribution. Some devotees would stand on the bus and set up the table, and we'd have the hurricane lamp, because no electricity, pump it up. And then some would go around the shops selling books. It wasn't that easy, actually. But anyway, we did something. So, yeah, there was the Belgian consulate or something was out there that was at the back. We couldn't, only when this new guest house came could you even see that. It was all closed up inside. So, some memories. In the summer or during the rainy season, again, these fans were different. They're all maybe from the British time. The fans, the same position. 4 fans. But I remember I used to stand under that fan in Mangalarti. And at the end of Mangalarti, my cloth would be just wet. No question of dancing. There was no energy for dancing. But just sweating so much. I guess the body's adjusted more now. But in the winter, it was, it was quite, there. No one even dreamed of having hot water for bathing. It's just, there was no question of it. Anyway, the bath was there. Or if there was water here, on the rare occasions there was water here, but just cold bath, that was the norm. So it's hot or cold. That's all. I mean, even in England when I joined, there was snow outside, but there was no hot water. Actually, there was hot water in one of the three showers, but it was only hot for about 2 minutes. And then it would take another half an hour to get warm. So every so often, that was in England, every so often someone could get a warm, somewhat warm bath. Otherwise, cold. Those were the days. So, yeah, I don't know so much now because it's so much modernized. But Calcutta was probably the funkiest city in the world. You don't know what the word funky means, but I mean, for a place to be really funky, the people have to not appreciate that it's funky. They just think it's normal. Funky means it's just like, just really strange, but the people just think it's normal. And the only place that can compare is New York City, which Srila Prabhupada, he liked New York. And when he was asked, how could you survive in New York the first time you've been overseas, he said, I'm an old Calcutta boy. So, just to give some idea, I don't come to Calcutta much now, so I don't know if it's still like that, but especially when you're coming in from the west, like I say, when you see all the buildings, and I thought they must be just, no, I couldn't believe when I first saw that anyone could possibly be living in them, because they're all just so broken down. But, I mean, everything about it. India in general is, or at least used to be, from the western, people coming from the west, where at least externally everything is quite ordered and organized, and people, they tend to follow, I mean, there are things like traffic rules. You see on all the buses and trucks here, what is that? Traffic, aine mene cholum. But I don't think even in those days, I didn't think people even had any idea that there's any traffic rules. Or even if there were, that you're meant to follow them. Traffic aine mene cholum means drive following the traffic rules. But there were no traffic rules. I mean, there was some kind of vague idea that you're supposed to stay on the left side of the road. Although, you know, when there's a cow sitting on the left side of the road, obviously you can't stay off. There's a huge pothole, which even the best Mahindra jeeps try to avoid. Then, yeah, it becomes difficult to stay on one side of the road. So, yeah, I'll give some idea of how it was. Yeah, the traffic was not nearly as much as now. It was almost all ambassador cars. Most of which also would either be scrapped in the West, even the new ones. They'd look, after 1 week's use, they'd look like, for the West, like they should be scrapped. Or they'd be in a museum. That's all. That's the only place they could be, at the scrapyard or a museum. So things like that, even to have cows wandering in the road. Nowadays, I don't think, they banned it or what? You don't see so much cows. But someone told me once, there were a bunch of Italian tourists that landed in Calcutta airport. As soon as they got out, they saw some cows and they're all photographing, like, just so amazing to have cows wandering in the city, which is normal in India, but in the West, it's just unimaginable. Yeah, then there are all kinds of wildlife wandering around in the streets. Of course, you don't get monkeys in Calcutta. I haven't seen monkeys in Calcutta. Some areas, you don't see monkeys. In some other cities, you see monkeys. You see the crows in the winter. People spit out their thick mucus and the crows immediately land on it and eat it up, enjoying it. You don't see pigs hardly in Calcutta either, wandering the street. So, Yeah, things like that. The bus, the double-decker bus leaning over an angle, if it went another like 2 degrees, it looks like it would fall over completely. Because, I don't know, the suspension on one side is broken because so many people on the bus, and mostly they're hanging off the edge. So eventually the suspension on one side breaks, but no one bothers to repair it. So it's just like leaning like this. And coming from India, you can't imagine, but in the West, this is just like unimaginable. It's just completely... If there was even one bus like that in the whole of the city, it would be on the front page as a scandal that they could imagine to drive such a bus. The person responsible would be suspended and probably imprisoned. And then the trams, which now they look pretty fancy. I think they're even air conditioned now, the trams. Is it? Please don't sit with your back to the deity. The metros, yeah. There was no metro, of course. So the trams, they looked like, they were from the British period, but they looked like they hadn't been ever painted since the British period either. So all this was coming with the hand rickshaws. In Borobazar, if you went out early in the morning, that was the only time of day, like about 5 o'clock in the morning, where the only time of the day when to go from Howrah Bridge to Shelda Station, the only time to go when it was not quicker to walk because of the like permanent traffic jam on Harrison Road, MG Road. So about 5 o'clock in the morning, if you went down there, you'd see the traffic was actually moving. And at that time, you'd see these Muslim dwarves who are crippled and they beg. What are they called? They're like, you know, this high. And they only have one hand and one leg or something like this. So you see them rolling to work. They'd roll a lot because they couldn't walk, so they'd like roll along. So like this, and people just think it's quite normal. There's seeing on the side of a down at Esplanade, like all the path is all broken on all different angles, and some guy lying there, some crazy guy with just some sack covering his genital area, lying down on the sidewalk on his back, holding a puppy and like torturing it, pulling its ears, and the puppy is squealing, and everyone's just walking past, and like it's completely normal. Leaning buses, leaning building. Some building was put up here on the corner. It was about 5 stories high, which in those days was pretty high. Within about 3 months, it started leaning and leaning and leaning over. I think eventually they demolished it. You'd see these huge piles of stinking garbage, and there were all kinds of living entities there. There were the hawkers or the scavengers. They'd be there with a stick to pick out the garbage and sort it all out, and also to drive the cow away. And the cow would be driving away the dog, and the dog would be driving away the cat, and the cat would be driving away the crows and the sparrows. They're all kinds of different living entities interested in the garbage. So, I mean, these things are normal for you. I don't know now, but in those days. But for us, coming from the West, it was... something which we couldn't imagine. Yeah. Ancient lifts. Most people in those days didn't wear shoes. I was surprised. I went to Bombay after some time, and at a stoplight, some beggars came, and I saw they had they're wearing chappals. I thought, what's this? Most people in Calcutta don't wear, and in Bombay, the Even the beggars, how can you beg if you're wearing chappals? Whereas in Calcutta, most people, they had no, they would go around with no footwear at all. So after some time when I was in Bangkok, my one godbrother, who was a good photographer, he was pressing me. He said, let's make a book. We can make plenty of money. I'll do the photos of Calcutta and you write the blurb. He said, it'll be a great book. It would have been a great book, but I wasn't very interested in doing that. Everything. I mean, just like wild dogs running around. Wild means no one owns them. All the time in Calcutta, there's apparently non-stop, every day there'd be some band or hartal. Amader dabi manto hobe, cholbe na chol, this kind of thing. It's just a... So it was strange, no doubt, for people coming from a different culture altogether. So the devotees in the temple, when I was staying here, the ones I can remember, they're almost all Americans at that time, because most of the devotees in the movement were from America. And Srila Prabhupada brought devotees, he very much wanted to preach Krishna consciousness in India. But he was disappointed that the Indian intelligent class weren't joining, and in fact, Indian of any class weren't joining. In Mayapur, some came to join, they're mostly Bangladeshi refugees, who came for material reasons as much as anything else. And hardly any... educated Indians were joining. And Indians just started to join just after Prabhupada left. Around the time Prabhupada left, then some Indians here in Calcutta, Mayapur, some started to join, and then gradually more and more came. So that now to have a devotee from the West preaching in India is a rarity. But in those days, that's all there were. Most of the devotees were from America. And Prabhupada brought them practically by force, because most of them didn't want to come. Prabhupada would always push, send men, I want men for India. And devotees thought, why? They went to India, I thought, why? It's like, because at that time the Indian people, they didn't show much interest. Prabhupada did some big programs and people appreciated, but then, as now, I suppose, devotees from the West, they couldn't relate to the Indian people in many ways. There's so many cultural differences, although in many ways, modern Indians, educated Indians, they can relate better with the Western culture because practically they grow up with it anyway. They're highly Westernized. But one thing that the Western devotees found it very difficult to relate to is that they had all come to Krishna consciousness really looking for a change in their life, to dedicate themselves to Krishna, whereas they found that in India, that's also one of the first impressions I have, that you'd see the shops, any shop names that were written in English, they'd often have names like Radha Krishna Bostralaya. So there are names of Krishna everywhere. So that was nice. So we'd see in India that the culture in many ways was highly Krishna conscious. And people, they liked Krishna, but they weren't, it was difficult to find anyone who was very serious about Krishna consciousness, which is something which our devotees, they found it very difficult to relate to. That how can you like to chant kirtan, but then just go on with your material life, and they couldn't relate to that, and I couldn't also. Of course, we see in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, "Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukritino jana arto jignyasu Artharthi Gyani Cha Bharatarshava. People come to Krishna for different reasons. And even many of the people coming in India, well, they weren't really coming to Krishna consciousness at all. It's just something that they grew up with to a large extent. So they couldn't understand why we were so insistent on that you must take this book. And often people would say that, oh, I'm a born Hindu, I already know all these things. You don't tell me, I'll tell you. They would say it, they would tell us. So, Prabhupada, practically by force, he was bringing devotees from the West to India. I mean, he would pressurize, he'd send some men. And devotees couldn't understand why Prabhupada was pushing so much to develop the movement in India. Now we can understand. Prabhupada had that vision. But at the time, there was a lot of complacency about being Hindus. There was mixed acceptance for our movement. Some people liked it. Actually, here in Calcutta, the Marwaris were always friendly to us. They would give donations, they would come to our programs, they accepted us. The Bengalis were pretty standoffish. They mostly thought we were CIA, it seemed. They were much influenced by that propaganda. The small Gujarati community, they were also helpful to us. If anyone who stayed in India in those days, Western devotees, it was generally thought you must be useless, because anyone who goes to India, they must be useless. Because Prabhupada was insisting that devotees go there, so the town presidents would just send their most useless people. The ones who didn't fit in or couldn't do any service. And also the whole mood was so different. Because in the West it was very intense. Because to be a Krishna conscious at all in the midst of so much maya, you have to do your sadhana very intensely and be really serious about it. But here in India, I remember Prabhu Vishnu Swami told me, he said, when I first came to India, I was just shocked. The devotees, they'd just be, you know, joking around during the japa period, or just quite slack in their sadhana. Chutananda was famous. He would be telling jokes or constantly. So it seemed like that also, that the devotees, they are useless, because it didn't seem that they're much serious. Although Prabhupada said he would give blessings to his devotees like that. 1 year in the West is like you get the advancement of 10 years. 1 year in India is you get the same advancement as 10 years in the West or something. So, on the other hand, those who are saying that... devotees in India are useless, they couldn't do anything themselves most of the time. There are so many big men who came in, and, yes, Prabhupada, I'm going to help you here, and within a few days they'd just be gone, because they couldn't handle it, because their American way, yes, we're going to get things done, it didn't work in India. And nothing worked, you know. The light switch is there, but the light doesn't work. The phone is there, but the phone doesn't work. You hire someone to do a job, but he doesn't work. And you know, nothing works. And so they'd be frustrated. And they're just... I mean, even there are cases of... there are at least two cases I heard of devotees who came to Calcutta, landed at the airport, took a taxi into the city, and before they reached the temple, told the driver to go back to the taxi and went back to the West. I know of two cases like this. They just couldn't handle it. Fortunately, my GBC, before I came, he told me, don't come back. So he told me, you can go to India, but don't come back. So I said, okay, I won't come back. So I didn't come back. More or less, I stayed here. So it's mostly American devotees in the temple. Most of them are still alive. One of them passed away. They're mostly all in Krishna consciousness still today, which is quite an achievement for our Western devotees. Shatadanya Maharaj at the time was the temple president with his dry humor, kind of heavy profile and dry New York humor. He's from New York, but actually slow moving, thoughtful, like that. Adri Dharan was like his right-hand man. He later became temple president, and he is from India, but he was more like an American, actually, because he had joined the movement in America. In those days, very few Indians went to the West, but he had been there for study. He joined the movement there. Madhu Sevita was there. He was from Italy. Now he's GBC, Guru, BBT, everything in Italy. Satvik was also there from Italy. Vamadev, after some time he came, he was from Jamaica. Ekadashi Prabhu from America. Kshetragya from America. Just 2 years ago I met him. After so many years I met him in America. And he was in one city. He'd been preaching there for years, but he had a stroke. So he was a little laid back. Arka, one devotee, godbrother called Arka. He had a misunderstanding with another godbrother of mine called Chaitanya Jivan, who was here. Misunderstanding means over Chaitanya Jivan's wife, sorry to say. Purna Pragya from America was here with his wife, Narayani. That area to the right of Radha Govinda, that was completely different. Actually, everything was completely different. The stairs were wider. There was no wall dividing this side of three Albert. This was originally one building, this and the next building. Then it got divided. And the stairs were very wide, wooden stairs. The women's quarters were over there. And there was Narayani lived there and maybe one or two other women. It must have been extremely austere for them. They would get up very early, so they, like I said, there was only one bathroom. So they would bathe before anyone else got up, because they're women. And, usually there was no water left after they'd bathed. So Narayani and maybe one or two others. Narayani was doing the puja. I can't remember who else. There were some other Matajis also, but I don't think they lived in the temple. There was one Cindy Mataji who became Adri Dharan's wife. And there was another one, I think her name was Sunita. I think she's still, until recently, she used to come and do the midday arati. What's her name? Sumana? Is that? Yeah. She still comes at midday? She must be quite old now. Yeah, she was Bengali. Yeah, and these Matajis, Sumana and Adri Dharan's wife, they're all Prabhupada disciples. I don't think I hardly spoke a word to them, and they're very quiet and very withdrawn like that. Another person who used to come daily, I can't remember his name, but he used to come daily and do service here. The flower men would come, and he would come and make garlands and everything, daily. And he was a householder living at home, but he hadn't married. He was just looking after his family. He was initiated by Madhav Maharaj at Kalighat. And later on, he would come daily and every morning and do service for a few hours. And then later on, when his parents died or something, then he joined the mutt. And now he's the sannyasi in charge at Madhav Maharaj's mutt in Puri, which is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's birthplace. So his spiritual, for years he was coming here and doing service. So who else was here in the temple at that time? The women were very quiet. I mean, they didn't... This corner, they would stand as close as they could, you know. No one told them to, but they were just, that was the norm in those days. No one could imagine women wearing jeans. It was It's just, or even men wearing jeans for that matter. It was just unimaginable. So Tadpur, I said, he was here. The only Bengali devotees living when I joined here were Tadpur, who passed away recently, and Ramaranjan, who was a young Bengali boy. He was cooking, helping in the deity worship, and he's been living in America for many years now, serving in... I saw him a few years ago. He was serving in a temple in Washington, D.C. There was Santosh, who was here. He was American also. And he was studying. I suspect that he lived here in the temple and he followed the program, everything. He got initiated by Prabhupada. But it seems to me he just wanted some facility so he could study. He was studying music at some place close to here. And after a few years here, because he didn't mix with the other devotees much or anything. And then after some time he went back to America and he's a university professor or something. And he's published some book on Indian music. But no mention of Krishna, you know, Prabhupada or anything. Other people from those times, B.S. Agarwal, who lived on the corner. Actually, that came a little later. There was a high-rise building there. But, and his wife is still coming. He used to come daily, and his wife still comes in the Shringa Arati. But I don't think he comes anymore. Is he still alive? He left already, yeah. He stopped coming at some point. There was this whole lafra with Adri and the Ritvik thing and this and that. So his wife still came. From those days there was Boro Dadu and Choto Dadu, who are still here. I know what their names are, that's just what we used to call them. They're still here. I mean, they're paid workers, but they've been here, you know, since time immemorial. Oh, Lama. Yeah. He's still working here? Yeah. B.S. Agarwal and his wife sometimes used to invite us for prasad. We'd go there over there and they'd cook all kinds of nice Punjabi items or I don't know. He got initiated? I never saw him with his hand in a bead bag. Choto Dadu has, you know, he chants. Is it? Yeah, okay, let's go on to a little later, maybe about 1980 or something. One short, young, quiet boy joined here. Then after, he was doing various services. Then after some time he got first initiation. Then he was helping in the deity department. Then he Brahmin initiation. Then he was on the altar. And he's been there ever since. That's Raseshra, isn't it? Yeah. About 1980, something like that, he joined. And practically from the beginning, he's just been with Radha Govinda. Through this whole Ritvik thing, he just kept his mind steady and served the Lord, which is good. He's remained with them all these years. So, is this any of interest to you? Historical record? Interesting? Is it? I could stop if you want. Prasadam. One thing that kept us going in every way was, at least when I joined here, we had excellent prasadam every morning. I think Arka was cooking, which was quite an achievement for a Westerner to cook with these coal chulas in a bucket. You have a bucket, you know, a bucket's converted into a chula, and he would cook with that. So it's excellent prasadam. Everyone would take all together here, and we'd have banana leaf plates and little clay cups, and every morning we'd have very good chapatis, Govinda Bhog rice, dal, two sabjis, chutney, tog doi, it would be made here, and like that. So it's very good, very healthy, very nice prasadam. And in the evening, every evening, there would be liquidy khichdi, usually with tomato chutney and dry papa. It was also very, very nice. And maybe once a week there'd be dalia, would be cooked. That was the treat. And in morning, right after Mangaladi, if you could get out quick enough, there'd be a little Mahaprasad distributed. Those who got there quickly enough, who ran out after Tulsi Puja, they could get a little of this rubbery prasad and Sandesh prasad. But you had to be, you know, quick, otherwise it would gone. And this fruit prasadam after Guru Puja was also a big attraction. Anyone who could get it, it went quickly because people from outside came. And another attraction of this temple, I mean, to reason to stay here, because after all, you could go anywhere in the world, you didn't have to stay in Calcutta. Or at least living in India was that we had milk at night, nice milk, because in those days milk in Bengal was very rare to get milk at all. And if you got it, it would be usually buffalo milk, and all mixed up with, you know, one part of milk to three parts of water. But we had nice milk here every day. So that was, in those days, to get a glass of milk ever was like a great luxury. But to get it every day, if you stayed here, for all the austerities of living in Calcutta, no water, no electricity, but at least you got something nourishing and palatable to keep the body going on. After some time, Arka had to leave because Chaitanya Jivan, I think, spent several years of his life trying to find him to kill him. I don't think he ever found him. Then there was a Rajasthani cooked, and he was really Rajasthani, Rajoguna. The standard of prasad went down from one day to the next. And he was extremely, he'd be swearing and cursing and chewing tobacco while he cooked, and with all the rats running in and out of the kitchen, sleeping up in the brahmachari ashram. It was a normal thing to have in the night rats running over you and sometimes chewing your toes. That was just still no. Sometimes that was, yeah, a few months before it was like that. Yeah, it was just part of life. That's all. That was just normal. So another major reason for staying here, at least for me, were Radha Govinda, who in London I'd been quite attached to the deities Radha Landanishwara. But actually their features have somewhat changed. If you see the old photos of Radha Govinda, they don't look exactly the same. And Govinda especially, his features were quite different to that of any other Krishna deity that I've seen. But very beautiful, Mahaprabhu with Radha Govinda. So they were indefinitely giving a lot of mercy to the devotees staying here. Like I said, it wasn't easy in many ways, with many people not liking us at all, the culture being so different, so many things, so many difficulties, getting sick all the time. Mahaprabhu, actually as far as I know, the only places in the world where Prabhupada established Radha Krishna with Mahaprabhu, which is the standard in the Gaudiya Mathas. But Prabhupada would establish Gaur Nithai, usually. The only places I know that he established these deities are Calcutta and Mayapur. And originally they were Radha Madhav with Mahaprabhu. And what now you can hardly even see them. They're still on the altar. They were the small deities. Then now they're the small deities. But at that time, they were the deities. So the devotees would come from all over the world at Mayapur festival. And Prabhupada would be there. They'd have darshan of Radha Madhava about this high. Like that. Not very small, but about this high. So Radha Madhava and Mahaprabhu. So like that. Another reason for staying on, really the high point of the day for everyone, or not for everyone, but many of the devotees in the temple, was the Sandhya Arati. And we would have every evening tremendous kirtans. One evening I would lead. There were four of us who would lead, one after the other. I can't remember exactly which order, but one evening I would lead. One evening Vama Dev would lead, this devotee from Jamaica. Oh no, was it Trinidad? From Trinidad. He's from Trinidad. Vama Dev would lead. One evening Madhu Sevata would lead, and another evening Satvik Prabhu would lead. And we were all, you know, I guess you could say pretty good kirtan leaders. We'd all sing the traditional tune, and then we all had a little bit different style of singing. Vama Dev would play Mridanga, and there was one Oriya milkman. He would come to bring milk, and then he would play Mridanga, and he was an excellent Mridanga player. So him and Vama Dev, they'd be opposite each other. Vama Dev was a huge guy, quite fat. He had this huge stomach with the Mridanga resting on his stomach, and he would be like standing there. Like quite stoically, like not showing much expression, something like, you know, Eric Clapton? You just stand there and play this brilliant guitar. So Vama Dev was something like that. But then the Oriya milkman would start dancing, and him and Vama, they'd be dancing together. Like we'd have, the kirtan would be just... And sometimes Satvik, Satvik was also a very good Mridanga player. So sometimes he would play Mridanga also, but usually played the Jaja. So we had really ecstatic kirtans, and we didn't have mics, and there was no need, because in those days we all had strong voices. And the acoustics in this temple, I know about now, I shouldn't think it'd be much. Of course, this was closed off, so the acoustics was great for kirtan. There was no echo, and just the sound became very... It became amplified automatically. So we really had very, very blissful kirtans every night here. Some local people would come and join in also. Mostly the temple devotees. There was one devotee from Argentina, Kashi Mishra. He used to dance so ecstatically in his own unique style. There were a whole group of devotees from Argentina who had come to India because just one time the government in Argentina sent some soldiers, and they gave them like 24 hours, leave the country or you're dead. So they were refugees actually living in India, their whole group. So Kashi Mishra was living here. And we hardly, you know, he was very quiet. He wouldn't say much or anything. And he didn't speak much English either. I think it was 1978, there was the Falklands Islands War, something like that. No, it must have been later than that, a little later. There was a war between, a short war, lasted about 2 weeks, between Britain and Argentina. So we didn't hear much about the news, but that was a big thing in the world. So we heard about that. And after a few days of this had been going on, this war between Britain and Argentina, because I was from Britain, he's from Argentina. And then I went to him and said, hey, jokingly I said to him, hey, look, we're supposed to be enemies. Because neither of us had thought, you know, it wasn't that I was thinking, I want Britain to win, and he wasn't thinking, we didn't identify with our countries at all. So it hadn't occurred to either of us that there should be any difference in the way we related to each other, because our supposed countries were at war with each other. So that was nice. Speaking of Argentina, I remember seeing in the newspaper, what was the paper, in the Statesman or something? There was no sports news in those days, maybe like quarter of a page or something. So I just saw in the paper there was like this much, like three or four lines, that Argentina had won the World Cup soccer. And that was it. But nowadays in India also, it's a big thing, like World Cup soccer and this and that. And I was surprised, because like in England, where I come from, World Cup soccer, it's like, you know, it's much. I mean, if there was, you know, the Twin Towers get knocked down, but that's not nearly as important as like England's football game to most people. In fact, I was just in Bangladesh, and on the train I was going from Chittagong to Dhaka just a few days ago, and we saw the paper, and the main headline was about Bangladesh winning their cricket game in Chittagong against England. And then underneath was like major earthquake and tsunami in Japan. So it was like more important news to them. And then the first line, devotee showed me, he said, the first line of the report said, Eta ki shotina maya. That was the first. Anyway, those of you who... So you can understand how the world's changed so much. Cricket, of course, people were interested in. But no one had any... I don't think anyone heard of tennis. Soccer, maybe in Calcutta there was a little interest. But not that much, because the World Cup final got this much mentioned in the newspaper. So it's all been... They've deliberately created interest in it, because it's for business. Then someone becomes a tennis star, and then Nike sells their shoes or something like that. So it's all business. Otherwise, cricket, well, now crores and crores and gambling and this and that. But it's just hype. That's all. So what services did we do? That's important, isn't it? Most of the devotees, yeah, I was doing book distribution here, and most of the devotees would be doing life membership, trying to get some money out to Mayapur, which at that time was, when I first went there, it was basically a field with one building and a wall around it. One relatively small building. So sending some money out to Mayapur. When I came here to stay for a few months, I was the temple commander. It was actually a very difficult time in my Krishna conscious or trying to be Krishna conscious life, because I'd been leading a Sankirtan party, but there were three devotees who all claimed to be my authority. And they all wanted me to obey them. And I believed in the principle of following authority, but they would all give different instructions, and if I followed one of them, the other two would get on my... You're supposed to follow me. So I got... I became discouraged, because it's something like, that psychological experiment where they put the banana and the monkey tries to get it, and then something comes and catches his hand. So something he wants to do, but if he does, naturally a monkey will try to get a banana, but if he tries for it, then he gets some electric shock or something. So I wanted to do service, but whenever I tried, then someone would get on my case. So I was feeling somewhat discouraged at that time. Then There were pandal programs arranged in parks every 2 weeks or so, or every month. They would do publicity in one area, and in the various parks of Calcutta, practically every week there'd be some program, and there'd be regular program. There'd be the Hare Krishna movie, which was a big thing in those days, because people mostly didn't have TVs, and the only TVs to, and if you had a TV, again the electricity would be off, and there'd only be Doordarshan, which wasn't very interesting. So we had our Hare Krishna movie of temples all over the world, and it was a big attraction. And then we have our Western devotees. We have prasadam distribution, and then different devotees would come and give lectures mostly. Bhakti Charu Swami would sometimes come and give lectures. So that was, we do Harinam in the area, and then the local people would come. So that was a very nice program that we did. Rath Yatra, of course. In those days, Rath Yatra would go up to north to Shambhaza, Agbazar, Shambhazar area, through Central Avenue. It's a very long route and huge crowds, huge crowds. Long route and huge. But then when they started to build the metro construction went on for about 15, 20 years, it seems. Isn't it? So then we couldn't go that way. Once at the, I think it was the crossing of Central Avenue, which is also called Chittaranjan, isn't it? Anyway, one major crossing, one of the ruts got broken, and the police were, it was like the traffic in Calcutta got jammed up, because we were right on the corner for like, it took about 2.5 hours to get it mended. But devotees were in bliss. They thought, hey, great, there's crowds and we're doing kirtan, and what does it matter? Like that. So we used to have good pandal pro. Still you have that. So here are just a few memories that I have. I remember one time here in Tulsi Arati in the morning. Singing the song, and I just realized that, well, I can pretty much understand all the words. And it's a very nice song. So I thought, well, if I can pretty much understand it, and it's so nice, and there are so many songs in Bengali, and I'm living in Bengal, it'd be a good idea to learn Bengali. So at that time, I decided to learn Bengali, which really picked up when I went to Bangladesh. But that was one of the best decisions I made in my life, and has really affected my life in so many ways. This book on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which I compile, I couldn't have done that unless I knew, could speak and read Bengali. One memory, I was on the Kalka Mail from Delhi to Howrah, and in the evening we got the news, late afternoon we got the news that Indira Gandhi had been shot dead. So when I arrived the next morning at Howrah, there was nothing moving. There was hardly anyone around, no vehicle. I had to walk from Howrah to Albert Road. And I just remember seeing some burned out bodies. Must have been Sikhs. There were some burned out bodies, and even there was one dog that got burned. It must have been a Sikh dog or something. Somehow or other, some dog got burned along with this. After Indira Gandhi was killed in many cities in India, in Delhi it was especially famous, but people started killing Sikhs. So that was one of the things I saw when I arrived. And I think the next day, things started to move around, and I went into Bora Bazaar, and there was a Gurudwara there, and it was still smoking. So it had been set alight, and there was still smoke coming out of it. So that's one memory. There are a few small things here. Sometimes we used to go down to Kalika Street, which is off Harrison Road, and often I would go in that area, like for membership or something like that. So we sometimes used to visit Srila Prabhupada's family, his old family temple, Radha Govinda. And sometimes we often used to go to Kalika Street for that. Damodar Prasad Shastra, I think his name was. He was the Sri Marwari Sri Vaishnav Ayurvedic doctor who Prabhupada, he saw him in a dream. It was like that. And so they brought him from Calcutta to Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was very satisfied with his treatment. So many devotees used to go there. And it's a small incident. I just remember I was sitting there once with Jaipataka Maharaj in Damodar Prasad's clinic, if you want to call it that. Little, tiny little place. And I handed something to Jaipataka Maharaj and he was shocked. Are you giving it with your left hand? And at that time I learned. He taught me that you don't give things with your left hand, you have to give it with your right hand. Yeah, so finding our way around, you'd get some address on Harrison Road or something, and you spend half a day trying to find. You go 391, 393, the number is 397 A/1, something like that. So you go 389, you find 389, so you think I'm pretty close. And you go 391, 393, 395, it must be the next building. And the next building is 220. And then you eventually, you know, you go through some back alley, through some dirty little other alley with all pan spittings everywhere, and then you find it's not actually on Harrison Road, because it used to be Harrison Road, but now it's the name's changed, but there's still the address is the same, and all this kind of thing. And then eventually you find the person, he's sitting in a tiny little office with six phones in the hope that one will work at some point in time, and just sitting there in some tiny little office having this huge business making crores of rupees. So one time we went to a program at Hindustan Motors, which as you know is on the other side of the, on Howrah side. So just one memory from that seeing a there was in the temple in which we did a program there, there was a map of the universe. So it showed at the bottom hell, well, Garbhadakshai Vishnu and hell and the Pitri Loka and all the different Sutala, Patala, Vitala, Sutala, and coming up to Atala, then going up to the heavenly planets, and then going up to the Rishi Lokas, and then the coverings of the universe and the the Karana ocean, and then you go up, and then there's Vaikuntha, and go up and up and up, and there at the top are Radha and Krishna, and then just above that there's a big light with an Om sign in it. So they got Radha and Krishna on above everything, so that was good, but then they messed it up. Prabhupada's room also here, which was quite different in those days. And that's about the only thing which, at least the shape is the same, although it's all those cupboards, there were different cupboards, and everything's Prabhupada's, everything changed. But behind Prabhupada, where he used to sit, which was actually on this side, not the other side, there was a picture which Prabhupada liked very much of Radha and Krishna intertwined with an Om sign. I was told Prabhupada liked that very much. Uh, Bhakti Charu Swami was here in Calcutta most of the time. He lived at Rainy Park, which is close to Guru Sadai Road. There we had the BBT there. He was in charge of BBT, so getting books printed. And he would come over sometimes and give classes. He was always trying to get us to follow Ekadashi by fasting all day and staying up all night, but most of the devotees didn't get into it. It's a small thing. I just remember once that he was going to give class and he asked me to sing Jeev Jago. And I wondered, how does he know I know Jeev Jago? Because we were all quite new then. We didn't know much. Once one devotee came, I'd not seen him before. He led the evening arati, and he went on for a long time. It was a very ecstatic kirtan. Devotees were every night we'd have kirtan with dancing, but this was really high energy and really blissful kirtan. So afterward I asked, who is that devotee leading the kirtan? He said, oh, you don't know? Like I was supposed to know. They said, that's Ayodhyapati. He's the head cook in Vrindavan. So that's now he's Bhakti Bringa Govinda Maharaj. I was the first. I think I'd seen him before that, actually. I'd seen him one time before in Vrindavan. But you didn't see him much because he was in the kitchen. When I was in Vrindavan, it was festival times. He was especially busy. And I just remember seeing him because he was wearing this white cloth, which was actually black, because he was the cook. And the cook means cooking with wood. So that was the first time I saw him. And then the second time I saw him was here in Calcutta. He led an especially blissful kirtan. Devotees running back and forward like that. Just one more thing. There are a few things. There's so many little things I could say. I remember. Actually, at the time when Srila Prabhupada passed away, we didn't know it, of course, at the time. But I was with a Sankirtan party, which had been in North Bengal. Maybe went to Assam that time also. And that was a restricted area for foreigners. You had to get a permit to go there. So we were just coming back and our vehicle broke down. And we were just crossing over the Faraka barrage at the time. It was just a little over the time, like a few hours. Like it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And our permit had expired like at midnight. Foreigner's permit to go in that area. So we were actually under arrest at the time. It was just like 2 hours after, and they arrested us. So we were under arrest at the time that Prabhupada passed away. No, actually, that must have been just before that. So we weren't under arrest. That was another crazy thing. You know, all these kind of crazy things happened all the time. So, yeah, we just arrived in Mayapur after a long drive and being arrested, and that must have been, we must have arrived on the 14th of November. Because the next morning, it was announced in just after Guru Puja. We didn't get the news because, you know, to make a phone call from Vrindavan to Mayapur wasn't very easy. So we didn't get the news until after Guru Puja. So then anyway, after that, we went out on traveling Sankirtan. And about a month later, I came to Calcutta. And I just remember it struck me because we'd been out on traveling Sankirtan, book distribution. And we came here. And that was the first time I come to Calcutta after Prabhupada had passed away. And every day they were having classes. And Shatadanya Maharaj, he hardly ever gave class, but he was giving classes to all the devotees. Like all the devotees were still in a state of shock. Practically, because we were on book distribution, traveling Sankirtan, that shock didn't hit us. Our Sankirtan leader wouldn't let us. Prabhupada passed away, that didn't make any difference. We only came into Mayapur to load our books and then go out again. Even to spend one night in Mayapur was unusual for us. We'd be out on the road all the time. So, yeah, we did spend a little extra time, but practically I think almost the same day as usual. We just left, so we didn't have time to think about much. We were just out on book distribution in different parts of Bengal. But we came here, and I know it was 1 month later, because I was struck that even after 1 month, all the devotees can think about is that Prabhupada has passed away. And the big thing was, how can we go on without Prabhupada? How can the movement go on? So there was like every day that Shatadanya Maharaj, and especially, was preaching to all the devotees, we have to go on, we have to serve Prabhupada, like that. But devotees just, they were just like in a state of shock and depression, and eventually things picked up. Actually, it picked up. What happened was then the next Mayapur festival, Bhavananda, I think, first of all, started initiating people. And then the movement kind of moved into its next phase, which became criticized a lot, because there were, in the zonal acharya era, is generally referred to with much disdain, but actually, unless they'd started initiating, I don't know what would have happened, because it was like, for several months, our movement was just seemed to be. I mean, everything was going on, but devotees, they were just in a state of depression or something like that. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions about this? I'm supposed to finish at 10:30. It's almost 10:30. Yeah. Were they? I don't know these particular deities. I'm pretty sure they were here when I first came, because we had Rathi Atra and everything. I don't know these particular forms. Installed by Prabhupada, many times we say installed by Prabhupada, but he may not have personally done it. He may not have personally overseen the ceremony. Often he would tell devotees, you install the devotees. Yeah, then? One thing Adri Dharan told me is that Prabhupada had said some devotees in Calcutta, they were going to the Rathi Yatra in Puri. And Prabhupada had said that, well, why don't they come to my Rathi Yatra? Meaning here in Calcutta. The Rathi Yatra was actually made big, as far as I remember, by Adri Dharan. It wasn't such a big festival. And then early 1980s, he got Mayeshwa Prabhu, who's now preaching in some place in California. It's full of Mayavadis. I can't remember the name now. So he built these big carts. Maheshwar was out there physically building these big carts. Otherwise it was one cart. So Maheshwar personally did that. And often we'll drive in from Bangladesh. Eventually we got some big vehicle, and we bought it from a German drug smuggler, and it was designed for smuggling drugs. They would drive from Germany to Afghanistan to India and back. Those days you could drive all the way through. So it was good for us, because we smuggled books into Bangladesh in those days. So it's quite a big vehicle. And we would just sleep on the roof of the vehicle. It was nice. Parked out here. It was nice. It's much hotter in the temple. So, yeah, and then the Rath cart would be there out on the road, and Mayesha would be working. In the last few days, he'd worked day and night. That's how I remember, because we were sleeping there, next to the work on the Rath cart. The Rath, just the Rath. So yeah, Adri Dharan actually, he made this into a big festival. There may be so many things could be said. It's just my perspective, one person. Yeah, anyone else wanted to ask something? Otherwise we'll finish. So please go on with your service to Radha Govinda. What was the response? It was slow and hard work. It was slow. I mean, nowadays in India people have the culture of spending money. But in those days people were very reserved about spending money. Now, because the commercial culture has come, so it's the Western consumer culture. The idea, earn money and spend. But in those days, mostly people, they wouldn't spend for anything except necessities, and then anything else, they would save it. And then they'd save it and they'd buy some gold, and because, you know, that any time some emergency, there may be some need, or upcoming marriages, and so people didn't spend for something extra. They were just whatever they needed, and that was it. And mostly they couldn't afford anything more anyway. So it was difficult. It was difficult to sell a big book in those days. Well, when I first started here, we didn't have big books anyway. There were only these small books. But it was slow, hard work. We didn't know Bengali or Hindi. People weren't that interested. But when we went to Assam, we got a tremendous response from the Bangladeshis who had come there. But here in Calcutta, it was difficult. And still is slow compared to other parts of India, it seems. Yesterday that TV station came and did an interview, right? And then I saw in Guru Sadai Road, there's a huge signboard for this ETV. So it's a major station, huh? So I could preach through the... I always thought that would be a good attraction, because Bengali people seem to like it when I speak in... when a foreigner speaks in Bengali. More than... Hindi-speaking people also like it when I speak in Hindi, but I think the Bengalis like it more. So that could be a good opportunity for preaching, if you want. Sometime I can give some lectures, if they would take it on the TV. Calcutta, I'd go in North Calcutta or something, and I'd stop and ask someone the way, and they'd be surprised I speak Bengali. Then they ask me, oh, where you're coming from, and within a short time there'd be like a big crowd all around. Whoa, khub bhalo bangla bolte pare. So it's an attraction. It's an attraction. In 1971, Srila Prabhupada was going to meet Indira Gandhi, and he had a list of points that he wanted to give to her. And the first one was that grant visas for 500 Western devotees. He wanted 500 devotees at that time, and I think there were hardly more than 1,000 devotees in the whole movement. He practically wanted to shift the movement, half the devotees, to India, because it's good for preaching. It's a good attraction. So many people have told me that when they see the Western devotees, that it makes them feel that, yes, I should also be doing this. So Prabhupada wanted to bring so many devotees from the West for preaching. After I'd been in India about 2 years, here in Calcutta, I met Basu Ghosh, who maybe at that time he was still in Hyderabad. I think he was, or maybe he was already in Gujarat. He came to stay in India about 19, I'm not sure, 72, something like that. And he's been here ever since. Anandamayi, who's in Hyderabad, he's been here since 71. He hardly goes outside Hyderabad. So yeah, I met him and Abhinanda, who was in Gujarat at the time also. So I'd been in India about 2 years at that time. He said, oh, now you're a real Indian devotee, because anyone who could spend 2 years in India, they're accepted as part of ISKCON India. Because otherwise, mostly 1 week, 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, devotees would come with the idea of staying and they wouldn't stay. So if you stay 2 years, then you're considered actually part of ISKCON India at that time. And it was so different. I mean, now there are comfortable living arrangements in Mayapur and Vrindavan, and people just live there. But the Western devotees at the time, they would only come to do some service and preach. You couldn't just live. You'd have to do something for the preaching mission. So, Hare Krishna, we'll finish there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who has brought us all in the shelter of his lotus feet for serving his mission, which is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.